From the studios of KXCI Community Radio in Tucson, Arizona, I'm King David McKenzie with the truth. Here's some of how the world is treating itself today. Pastor Rick Warren, who last week denied ever supporting California's anti-gay marriage Proposition 8, despite evidence to the contrary, has now bailed on an opportunity to explain himself. Warren canceled an Easter Sunday appearance on ABC's This Week just moments before the scheduled interview, according to host George Stephanopoulos. An aide to the pastor tells Politico that Warren's fatigue and exhaustion, forcing him to cancel several sermons in addition to his appearance on ABC News, were exacerbated by inhalation of fumes from the newly refurbished but still drying pulpit that was used in the televised services at Warren's church on Saturday night. WhizBangBlue.com has been doing a great job of debunking the right-wing Tea Party sham that Fox News Channel has been boosting in recent weeks. Especially interesting is the fact that it all seems to draw back to Zach Christensen, the producer of right-wing yacker Milt Rosenberg's show on WGN Radio in Chicago, who owns the URL ChicagoTeaParty.com. Rosenberg's show was also the initial source for the myth of former weatherman Bill Ayers being one of President Obama's best buddies last year. Even odder is that Christensen has owned the ChicagoTeaParty.com domain since last August. So much for this being a grassroots movement. An AstroTurf movement is more like it. President Obama will be easing travel and remittance restrictions to Cuba this afternoon in a long-awaited move to thaw relations with the island nation. Under a new rule, Americans will be allowed unlimited visits and money transfers to family in Cuba. A formal announcement is expected this afternoon at the daily press briefing. White House officials told media the policy change is intended to make Cubans less dependent on the Castro regime and to foster democracy on the island by giving Cubans more contact with Americans. About 1.5 million Americans have relatives in Cuba. Currently, family visits to Cuba are limited to 1 every 3 years. The U.S. also limits the amount of money Americans may spend in Cuba to $50 per day and caps at $300 the amount Americans may bring to relatives. According to the U.S. State Department, remittances form a significant role in the country's economy, totaling between $600 million to $1 billion per year, with most coming from families in the U.S. Also today, Obama directed his administration to expand the list of items allowed in gift parcels sent to Cuba. It will include clothes, personal hygiene items, seeds, fishing gear, and other necessities, according to the Associated Press. Devout Christian followers of Good Friday's crucifixion rituals in the rural Philippines village of Capitangan, north of Manila, were devastated to learn that Australian television comic John Safran's nailing to the cross alongside local penitents this weekend was a TV stunt. Safran, who is Jewish, is infamous for his radical attempts at religious satire, including running nude through Jerusalem streets asking forgiveness from a priest for masturbating in his bed. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, trying to calm down another political scandal while he grapples with a financial crisis, said today that government advisers caught smearing opposition politicians should be fired. Brown's comment followed the resignation of a close advisor, Tamian McBride, who was caught proposing a campaign of slurs to embarrass senior Tories and their wives before a general election. Facing calls to make a personal apology, Brown wrote to Britain's most senior civil servant, Sir Gus O'Donnell, urging tighter rules on the conduct of political advisers. He said that he had written to those mentioned in McBride's emails, believed to include Conservative Party leader David Cameron and Treasury spokesperson George Osborne. Obituaries over the weekend include that of Judith Krug, the former director of the American Library Association and the founder of Banned Books Week, Stomach Cancer in Chicago, age 69. Harry Callis, the Philadelphia Phillies' longtime play-by-play voice, collapsed in the press box before today's Phillies-Nationals game in Washington, was rushed to George Washington University Hospital, and died less than an hour later. He was 73. And last week saw the death of one 70s smut reel icon, Jack Wrangler. Last night, another such icon, Marilyn Chambers, was found dead at her home in Santa Clarita, California, by her daughter. Cause of death unknown, at age 57. Remember the story last week about a caller to KZZP in Phoenix claiming that he had witnessed the murder of a Cincinnati bully in the late 80s? Now the Arizona Republic newspaper says despite gruesome detail in the descriptions, Phoenix police say their questioning has led them to believe the tale was fabricated from an urban legend. The listener has not been charged or arrested. His tale of the Riverside killing of a noted local bully by a mob of former victims ran for about 10 minutes on KZZP's confession program last week and won him Kelly Clarkson tickets. I wonder what Clarkson thinks about that. Conficker has attacked more than 700 computers at the University of Utah, including computers at three of the school's hospitals. The Conficker worm has been attacking the web with malware and attempting to lure users into downloading fake antivirus software. Meanwhile, a Twitter worm is also wreaking havoc online. One of the folks I've become acquainted with on the Usenet is an actor named Jim Beaver. He's currently Sheriff Mills on the CBS series Harper's Island, and if you watched the HBO series Deadwood, Jim played Ellsworth on that show. His wife was Cecily Adams, the casting director on Third Rock from the Sun and That 70s Show, and the daughter of Don Adams, the comic actor of Get Smart legend. He's putting out a memoir this Thursday dealing in part with non-smoker Cecily's death from lung cancer 5 years ago, not long after their daughter was diagnosed with autism. The website for the book is the book's title, LifesThatWay.com. If you buy a copy, tell Jim that I sent you. And if you have any material you'd like for me to include in the next few days, just email me at baronofarizona@gmail.com. That's baronofarizona@gmail.com. And please indicate where you're listening to this program from. Oh, and one more thing today. There have been, through the years, restaurants around the world with singularly quirky themes and signature dishes popping up, such as the one in Kaohsiung, Taiwan, that seats all diners on toilets, and the Beijing restaurant whose cuisine features animal penises. Last year, a group of doctors in Riga, Latvia, opened Hospitalis, a medical-themed restaurant whose dining room resembles an operating room where nurse waitresses bring food on gurneys, accessorized with syringes and forceps in addition to knives and forks, and with drinks served in beakers and test tubes. Hospitalis' signature dish is a cake with edible toppings that resemble fingers, noses, and tongues. Actually, the basic concept isn't brand new. When I lived in La Crosse, Wisconsin a couple of years ago, there was a pizza place that called itself Pizza Doctors, with candy-striped waitresses going from table to table and offering diners slices of various types of pizzas. Me, I vastly prefer Vallejo's Pizza Kitchen in my birthplace of Kenosha, Wisconsin, or Pavlov's Pizza on the Isthmus in Madison, where the reason for patronage is simply damned good pizza. Of course, if you don't like this news, you always have the option of making some news yourself. In Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie. Until tomorrow, have yourselves some peace and oranges and maybe even some decent pizza.